Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new Season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And it is time for another classic episode. This episode originally published on October 14th, 2013. The world was such a different place back then. This episode is called Ads on the Go, where we talk about everyone's favorite topic, advertising. But as it turns out, it's important stuff, and sometimes there are ways to do it well, where it's actually helpful, and sometimes there are ways to do it really, really badly, where it's intrusive or worse. So let's listen to this classic episode, and I'll talk to you guys again in a bit.
Any company that has a web presence and they are...
Let alone a company that is a web presence,
right.
Period.
Yeah, they're all concerned about this because they want to make sure that they're continuing to serve up an experience that is a good experience for the people who are using the web on whatever device they happen to be on.
Mm-hmm. And furthermore, something that can actually make them money.
Yeah, and as it turns out, this whole mobile... this move to mobile browsing is really disruptive as far as that goes. But
it's a pretty big industry as of August 28, 2013, according to an insight company called eMarketer, the mobile advertising global market is set to be worth over $16 billion this year.
That's a lot of money.
Which is an 89% growth over 2012.
And I imagine that in 2014, we'll see that number even go even higher, because you're seeing, when you start looking at sales figures for things like tablets and smartphones, they're through the roof and it's across the globe. Although I will say, and we'll get into this, different parts of the globe value different platforms. Some are very tablet crazy and some are like, no, I want my smartphone.
Right. Absolutely. But eMarketer is also saying that the desktop ad market is set to peak in 2014 at around $35 billion and be on a decline after that.
Yeah. And part of the reason for that is that we're seeing more and more people move away from those traditional desktop and laptop platforms. And we're also seeing, because we're seeing this move toward mobile, that itself is is in part devaluing advertising on those traditional platforms, right? So if everyone is moving to something else, then you can't sell your website that's designed for a desktop as an ideal place for advertisers to put ads, because if no one's using a desktop to view that website, then no one's getting that content.
So, right. And whenever you have that split, you're going to have some people who are very happy with their experience and some people who are not, just because of the way that the page was designed, as I'm sure everyone listening to this has had the experience of in the past.
Right. There's even some discussion and some debate about the value of, say, a specific app for a web content creator versus a mobile browser.
Absolutely.
So there are websites out there that have apps. HowStuffWorks has an app. And then they also have a presence on the web, an actual website. And there are some people who say that they much prefer the experience of going through a mobile website than using an app, even if that app has been optimized to really feature whatever the content is of that website. Because I guess part of it is that when you're in a web browser, you have a lot more freedom to go from one place to another. And that may not be within the confines of whatever website you're visiting. Whereas if you're going through an app, that's pretty much what you're seeing.
Right.
Right.
So some of those more traditional methods that we're thinking are going to peak in the next couple of years.
Right. So, of course, the one that we all know, because these date back to the very earliest days of web pages, are banner ads.
Right. Those are the things that you'll see along the top or sometimes along the side of a web page that you're viewing.
Right. Yeah. Some people will go so far as to differentiate banner ads from whatever appears on the side.
Sidebar.
Sidebar. But it's essentially the same thing. This is something that is part of the frame of the website you're looking at. So you're all familiar with this, I know. So I'm not going to go into great detail about what it is, because assuming that you're listening to a podcast, I'm pretty sure you've visited a web page that's had a banner ad on it. So that's one version. Another, of course, are the dreaded pop-ups and pop-unders. These are the ads that will either generate a window on top of or beneath your web browser. So if it's on top of your web browser, you start
looking. It interrupts your viewing experience. If it's underneath, you'll see it when you finally close your page.
Yeah, when you close your page or you close your browser and suddenly you see like 18 different windows there and you think, whoa, what was going on?
Something starts making noise that you're not looking at.
Oh, man. Hey, Lauren, let me ask you, is your favorite kind of ad my favorite kind of ad? You know, the one that immediately starts to autoplay video with sound?
That's my favorite. How did you know?
Yeah, it's also great when you're doing research at work and then suddenly you've got like, Despicable Me minions screaming at the top of their lungs, banana! And you're like, well, I didn't plan on treating everyone to that.
Professionalism.
Or if you're like me and you think, I'm going to click on this link and walk away to get coffee because it's going to take a while for this page to load. And then you come back and there's a circus going on at your desk and all the writers and editors of HowStuffWorks hate you even more than they did already. Anyway, so besides pop-ups and pop-unders, you also have floating ads. These are the ones that actually float over the text. They may even move and block your view of it. And sometimes there's not even a way of closing it. You just have to wait until it goes away. And expanding ads, these are the ones where if your cursor goes over it, it suddenly expands to fill up.
And sometimes we'll then start playing music or video.
Yeah, that can also happen. But it'll cover most of the web content that you were going to visit. Then there are, of course, ads that are not as...
Inline text ads.
Yeah.
Which are a little bit sneakier. Those are the things that you might have seen, like a double underline in an article that you were reading that should you happen to click
on
it.
It'll take you to whoever is actually purchased the ad. And usually it's something that directly relates to whatever the term is. So, for example, if I were to write a blog post and I'm mentioning a particular type of camera, there might be a double underlined version of the camera's name. And if you clicked on it, it might take you to, say, Amazon.com or some other retail site where you could purchase the camera.
Right, sure.
So, that's one. It's usually considered a slightly less obtrusive, but it can also be sneaky or misleading or... it might be one of those things where you've trained your mind in that Wikipedia approach where everything that's a link will just take you to a different article.
Right.
And you're expecting an article and you get
something informational rather than advertorial.
You never know, And then there's also search engine marketing. That's where you end up paying a search engine to feature your product on a results page that relates back to whatever that product is.
Those will be like a Google sponsored ads that
right.
pop up along the, like usually the first two at the top and then maybe a few along a sidebar.
Right. So it's usually
that are related to your search and can be really very helpful, depending on the algorithms that Google is using for that particular ad. But yeah, it has been found to create some confusion in some populations of internet goers as
right.
to whether those are really the best search result or something that is sponsored. Some people apparently don't read the fine print.
Right, right. Now, there are different ways that these ads are actually
making money.
Yeah,
so
we're going to take you into the inside. Come along with us. Of course, if you've listened to Tech Stuff for a while, you've heard that Chris and I did an episode about web advertising ages ago. And you probably have heard these terms from that as well. But it's certainly important in our discussion about mobile advertising. So one of the very common forms of compensation is the CPM, which is cost per mil, which is not cost per million, but rather cost per thousand. And we're talking about impressions here or views. So it's every single time that page that has that ad on it has been loaded into a browser, whether that's someone who has loaded it and then hit refresh a billion times or if it's a billion people who looked at that page once.
Right.
So it's counting up every time that page is loaded, because every time that page is loaded, that ad has been displayed.
And so that's a certain amount of money for every 1,000 displays of the page and therefore the ad.
Right. And then that amount of money has changed dramatically over the history of online advertising. There was a time where if you had a really heavily trafficked site, you could demand a pretty high price for that. You know, we're talking, you know, you might think $30 or $40 for every 1,000 views isn't much, but if you get a million views per day, that really starts to add up. But then, you know, you have, like we talked about devaluing, you start to see that amount go down even for the most heavily trafficked sites, because a lot of that traffic starts to come in through mobile. And we'll talk about why that's a problem in a little bit.
Right. So after that, you've got CPC, which is cost per click.
Yeah. Now, this is actually people who don't just see an ad, but actively click on that ad to go through and look at whatever the site is that sponsors that ad.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, it doesn't matter how many people view it. What matters is how many people click it. And you could argue that this is not entirely up to the content creator, because the content creator is just creating stuff that they want people to look at. The advertiser would have to create an ad that was enticing enough to get people to click, or tricky enough so that people click on it by accident. Although I think most people would argue that's not very effective.
That's not really to the benefit of all involved.
Right. And, you know, it all depends on who's doing the marketing too, right? If it's a third party marketing department that is creating these ads and all they are concerned with is throwing as much traffic to the advertiser as possible, then they might not really care if it's truly effective in getting people to convert. That's where we talk about conversion numbers, to convert over into buying something. What's the third one?
That third one is CPA. That's cost per action. And that is going a step further than cost per click. It's when someone has clicked through to a site and actually does whatever the advertiser wanted them to do, like purchase a product or
enter a free trial. So
mm-hmm.
if you've listened,
subscribe, right?
Yeah, you've listened to us talk about our sponsors. We have several sponsors where they use this approach. So if our listeners go and they sign up for these things, then that means that the sponsor will end up paying whatever the agreed upon amount
mm-hmm.
is. So in other words, go and sign up for those things, guys, because that's awesome for us. Also, I mean, our sponsors are great, so that helps
yes.
too.
Yes.
So let's talk about the mobile ad problem. Now, the problem is that a lot of these traditional ads that we talked about, the banner ads and the pop-ups, pop-unders, the text ads, are a lot harder to navigate or to see in a mobile platform, particularly when you're talking about something like a smartphone, where the landscape of viewable area is really tiny.
Right, right. And people are moving through at a pretty rapid rate of reading speed, maybe paying a little bit less attention.
Yeah, or it may even be that in order to view whatever the content is of the website, they resize it so that the text or whatever it is they're looking at
is actually readable, therefore blocking out the section of the page that had the ad on
it. Yeah, that stuff might not even appear on the screen.
Sure. There's also a lot of programming bugs in which, I mean, you know, we've got so many mobile devices and carriers and OSs that
right.
at a certain point it gets difficult for a single you know,
web developer to create a website that looks good on everything.
Sure.
Yeah. A lot of these websites also have mobile versions of them that are optimized for the mobile viewing experience, which often means that they leave the ads off because
entirely, right.
There's just no space for them. It ends up making the content look all squished, and that's a terrible experience for the user, which means that the user is less likely to go to that
right?
website. So that means that in order to monetize the website, we have to start looking at different ways to have kind of ads or sponsorships or whatever, because the traditional ways just aren't they aren't designed with that platform in mind.
Right. And this is certainly not a new problem or a new set of problems. As of 2007, mobile was becoming a priority among media and marketing executives. I mean, that was before the iPhone, guys.
Yeah.
You know, as of 2006, Nielsen had started tracking cell phone use across media.
Right. Right. Yeah. I remember that I could browse with my old I had a Nokia phone that hey, Microsoft's buying them now, but I had an old Nokia phone that could browse websites, and you would just get in these little bitty texts, and you'd have to, you know, you wouldn't get any graphics at all. It's just text. I rapidly decided that was not an ideal experience for me.
Yeah, I believe I had a Samsung, like a flip phone.
That allowed you to do the same sort of thing.
Or maybe a Motorola. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah,
probably not important.
It wasn't until I got a smartphone that I really started to use it to do things like browse the web.
Yeah. So some of the trends that are going on right now.
Yeah, let's talk about them. So I got a lot of this information from Adobe. Now, Adobe does a big digital index report every now and then. It's semi-regular is how I've seen it described. And part of it is the State of Mobile Benchmark Study. And so these were some things that they found in their study. They found that tablets drive more web traffic than smartphones and may actually be a PC replacement when it comes to web consumption. Now, it's not that way. It's not like they've completely replaced PCs already, but that it looks like tablets are poised to take the place of PCs when it comes to just browsing the web and consuming content
for
that
way. For those basic functions that are, you know, anything more simple than, you know, complex photo editing or video editing, something
right.
like that.
So in general, people visit 70% more web pages per visit on a tablet than they do with a smartphone. So, you know, that just means that every time you get online with a tablet, then you tend to be looking at more web pages than you would be if you were using a smartphone at that time. Now, it may turn out that people use smartphones more frequently than tablets, and so maybe those numbers are a little misleading, because if you're using a smartphone a lot throughout the day, you may actually visit more web pages accumulatively than you would in one visit with the tablet.
And there are more smartphones out there in the wild than there are tablets now.
That is absolutely true. There are far more smartphones than tablets in the wild. Although, according to Adobe, tablets are still driving more traffic.
Wow.
They said that people who use tablets to browse shops are three times more likely to buy something than someone on a smartphone. But it's probably important now to look at some actual numbers, because you sit there and think, wow, if I'm using a tablet, I'm three times more likely to buy something than if I were looking at the same content on a smartphone. Hold on there, big guy. So this is where we start talking about conversion, converting someone from browsing to buying.
That's that action. That's that cost per action kind of rate that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, this is where we go from, hey, that's a pretty pair of shoes, to, hey, I own those shoes now.
Right.
So if you're using a smartphone, it said that there was a 0.7% conversion rate, meaning that 0.7% of the people shopping on a smartphone would buy stuff on a particular, on a typical visit.
And so three times that for tablets, that would make it 2.2%.
Yeah. So when we're talking three times, we're talking from less than 1% to just over 2%. It's not like some overwhelming number. And also for PCs, not that impressive, actually.
It's only 3.3% for PCs.
So again, this is...
So this is not actually a method that is working on a particularly calculable level across the field.
Yeah. Now, if you look at just the mass number of purchases, it ends up being huge numbers, right? We're talking billions of dollars. But when you're looking at all of traffic that is going to these sites, it's a tiny little percentage. Now, if you were to compare that to, say, a person who walks into a brick and mortar store and how likely they are to actually walk out with a purchase, I'm sure the numbers are pathetic. However, way more people can come to your website than can come to a typical brick and mortar store. Yeah. You know, it's just the physical limitations there means that it's a totally different set of numbers. So even though it's a small percentage, it may still be a large number of people.
Sure. That's still, I don't know. That nonetheless says to me that, that possibly a better system could be found.
Oh, sure. If we can get to a point where we are compelled to buy, you know, that we are punished if we do not buy, and that world is coming. I've said too much. All right. So the leading operating system in the United States, mobile operating system, I should say, in the United States is, here's a big shock.
iOS.
Yeah. People love their Apple products.
Mm-hmm.
Sheep. I'm just kidding.
Hey,
I'm just kidding. That's... My wife uses an iPad and an iPhone. She loves it. I actually really think that iOS devices are amazing. I just happen to be an Android user.
Right.
So while I make the joke, I am not one of those people who's like, Android good, iOS bad. That's not me.
Which is good because we might have to fight.
Yeah, and I don't want to do that because she's scrappy, y'all.
I am. Elbows like knives. And that's despite the fact that there are more Android devices overall available on the market.
Oh, yeah, sure.
By far.
Yeah.
I mean, considering that the iPhone is...
Is one device.
One
right?
device.
Yeah, you can buy an older iPhone, but it's still one line of products, whereas Android comes in all shapes, sizes, flavors, and problems. there's this whole fracturing of the market thing that we could talk about, but that's a different podcast. Tablet versus smartphone use is not steady across the globe. I mentioned that earlier, that there are some places in the world where people prefer to browse on tablets and others where they prefer smartphones. So, for example, in the UK, about 65% of people use tablets, so that's the majority there. But in China, it's like 90% of the people in China are using smartphones to browse the web. So it's also hard to create a strategy, a mobile strategy, that is going to affect the entire globe. First of all, being able to do business around the world is problematic, too. That's tricky.
Sure, sure. And that's why companies like, I think that right now Google owns more than half of the share in the mobile digital ad market across the globe.
Yeah, Google, when you think about it, Google, and we've said this before, too, Google is not really a search company. Google is an online advertising company.
Right. And they've incorporated YouTube into that.
They've incorporated everything. Like
email
tracking, GPS tracking. I mean, there's based upon what region you're in. Now, a lot of this is opt-in, so you're not forced to do it.
Yet.
The compulsion's coming, people. Just telling you now. But no, you're not forced to do it. But if you do it, then you end up getting what we call targeted ads, right? They're targeted to you based upon your behaviors, based upon where you're from. If there are more demographic things known about you, like your gender and your age, that can go into targeted advertising, which I understand for some people, it's really kind of a creepy idea. This idea that the advertisers somehow know more about me.
A lot of privacy issues wrapped up in this.
Now, personally... And this is just personally, literally, like just as it applies to me, I don't apply this to anyone else. I love targeted advertising. And the reason why I love it is because I'm seeing ads that are really much more relevant to my interests. And I learn about things I never would have known about otherwise. And I love to be able to do that kind of shopping. But I would not say that everyone wants to have that exact same experience. There are people who have had very disruptive things happen to them because advertisers were able to figure out certain life situations and send them messages unsolicited.
Oh, right. There's that one horror story of that girl who was living with her parents, and Target, based on her purchasing behavior, sent her a congratulations, you're having a baby package.
And then her father got all upset at Target saying, how dare you send this to her? And then sent another letter to Target saying, I'm sorry, I did not realize my daughter was pregnant. And boy, yeah. So there are definitely ways that this tool can go wrong.
Oh, right. You know, it can be pretty awkward and pretty invasive. At the same time, I do have to say that, yes, I agree with you, Jonathan. And I personally am happier when, for example, I've just gone through a terrifyingly bad breakup and Facebook is not sending me engagement ring ads. That's a great day for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Personally.
I could see that. Okay, that's fair. The last point I have under the trends, this one I recommend we all take with a huge grain of salt. And the reason is that, like you said, Lauren, at the top of the show, some of the sources we have for the information are from companies that have a vested interest in online advertising.
Basically all of them, which makes things a little bit sticky.
Right, because, I mean, they might be saying, hey, you know, you shouldn't get out of desktop advertising because it's going to come back in a big way. And it turns out the reason why they say that is because they have this whole advertising strategy that they want to sell you.
Based upon, right.
But in this case, there's a company called HostGator, which is vested in mobile advertising. So again, let's take that into consideration. But they say that they figure that mobile will overtake fixed internet access by 2014. So we're recording this in 2013, which means next year we would see mobile browsing overtake internet browsing, or at least mobile access to the internet overtake fixed access. Now, while that is coming from a company that is offering up mobile advertising strategies, it's also one of those things that I find easy to believe just based upon the trends we've been seeing so far. Now, maybe it means that it's not really 2014. Maybe it'll be a few more years down the road before we actually see this happen. But I think it is happening.
Right. And, you know, whether it overtakes it or not, it's clearly a functioning revenue source. Facebook reported that as of Q2 of 2013, mobile ads made up 41% of its revenue.
Yeah. And in fact, that was one of those things that when Facebook was having its IPO, there was a little bit of a shakeup because Facebook at that point had not really figured out how it was going to handle the mobile ads part of its revenue stream. And so they discovered that their revenues for one quarter that year were lower than what they had projected. Mm-hmm. And it was partially because everyone was starting to, well, I say everyone, so many people were starting to use the Facebook mobile app, mm-hmm. or just to access Facebook on a mobile platform, which again gives you a totally different experience than on a desktop.
Right. So, it made a lot of investors lose faith in them. And in fact, this Q2 2013 news, was basically what preempted the rebound in Facebook stock this summer.
So. Right. It shows how powerful mobile really is.
We have a little bit more to say about ads on the go, but first let's take a quick break.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient. I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the challenges about mobile advertising. We've touched on some of them already, but we'll kind of have to pull them all into this gigantic cloud of how do we do this, right? So the type of content you consume might depend upon the device you're using, because some devices use certain, make certain type of content easier to access or to consume.
For example, if a website is in Flash, probably you're not looking at that.
On an iOS device anyway.
Right.
You know, Android for a while supported Flash for a while. That's a good example. Exactly. When, I don't know about you, Lauren. I don't know how frequently you will go out to eat at some place where you're not really familiar with the menu. But if you've ever had the experience where you click on the menu thing and then you realize that the menu was programmed in Flash, you probably have had some choice words.
I have cursed the heavens multiple times based on that.
Yes. When you are
much fist shaking has occurred.
Grasp of hanger, which is the combination of being hungry and angry at the same time. Lauren and I both suffer from this. So you do not want to be in a room with us when neither of us have had a snack.
Yeah, both of us are a tiny bit on the hypoglycemic end and also have very particular dietary restrictions. So
right.
It makes us really entertaining co-hosts.
The longer our podcast goes, the more likely we are to come to blows. Not because we don't like each other, but because we're hangry. Well, I go into fits of rage when I try and access something like a menu on a mobile device. And that's a perfect example of how companies have to really take that into account when they're designing their mobile websites or their mobile applications. They need to make sure that they are catering to a platform that has its own set of advantages and disadvantages, things it can and cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the concept of content grazing, which makes it even more complicated.
And that is the concept that most people, when they're on their mobile devices, are doing multiple other things at the same time. Maybe watching TV, maybe on their tablet, maybe also checking their smartphone simultaneously.
Yeah, they might have, usually it's at least two screens, probably more than two screens for some of us, where we are consuming things on multiple platforms all at the same time, all of which have their own advantages and disadvantages, like I just said. So
that may or may not be related. You know, I think the hope, like, that if you're watching television is that you're going to be on your tablet looking up extraneous information about that television program.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily the case, because
sure.
Let me tell you.
Huh.
I have frequently watched Netflix on my Xbox 360. There's going to be a lot of name dropping here because I want to just point out how insane I am. So I've got my television on. I've got my Xbox 360 on. I'm watching Netflix through that. So that's one thing I've got going on. Meanwhile, I've got my laptop up and I'm in Google Docs so that I can type in snarky comments about whatever it is I'm watching, because I'm probably doing this for another show I do. So then I've also got my smartphone there where I'm getting all of my status updates from various things, because I don't want to have too many tabs open on my laptop. That slows things down for all the snark. So already I've got three screens going. I have a problem, and I'm not alone. It turns out there's a lot of people.
It's not an uncommon problem, right? And yeah, and people cite all kinds of different reasons for doing this. And,
sure.
And it might be that where you just don't want to put down all of your feeds, where you have the slight addiction to all of the information coming in all the time.
You're very kind to say slight. Yes. But that is one. There's one where it's just, I just want something on in the background. I can't have it be quiet. I just have to have something on in the background mm-hmm. while I'm doing this other thing. And it's not that I'm paying any attention to that, but I have to have it on.
Right. Or even that, you know, during commercial breaks or if something is, if you're having load screen issues or something like that.
Yeah,
that you're bored.
Exactly. That you're bored. And rather than be bored, you want to switch your attention to something else to keep you entertained while you're waiting for the boring thing to stop.
I am so guilty of that.
I am too.
That's a thing that I'm working on.
But yeah, I fall into that same sort of category. And we're not alone. There are a lot of people. And of course, everyone seems to think that they are the ideal multitasker, even though studies have shown repeatedly that the vast majority.
A small portion of the population is actually good at multitasking.
Like 1 or 2% of the entire population.
Right. Everyone else is lying to themselves, me included.
Right, right. Everyone else, your performance on every individual task you are trying to do simultaneously declines. For a few people, the super taskers, this is not the case. But if you are wondering if you're a super tasker, you're not. I mean, it's just safe to say that.
Statistically speaking, nope.
All right. So there's also the idea that we had before about these different screen landscapes. The fact that websites are laid out in a different way depending upon what kind of device you're looking at. You know, if you're using a smartphone, you're going to get a certain layout. If you get a tablet, it's a different layout. That might be similar to the layout you might get from a laptop or desktop, but it's still a little different. It's not, you know, each one is trying to be optimized for the experience, because one size does not fit all. Like, you can't have one design of a website and expect that to work across all devices. I mean, there's a lot of variety out there, right?
Especially, right, yes. And like we were saying earlier, there are so many different screen sizes when you get into Android devices in particular that it's, yeah. So you're working with a whole bunch of different devices.
Yep.
All of which are carried by many different wireless operators.
Sure.
Working upon many different operating systems.
Okay, yeah.
From many different locations.
Oy.
So location-based stuff has to be very particular.
Right.
The advertisers creating this content may not actually be personally using the mobile platforms that they're working with, and therefore might not be familiar enough with them to really have insight into what will and won't work for people.
Right.
And furthermore, you know, this is all new as of 2007.
I would say it's still very much an emerging
kind
of technology. I mean, by now, I think from a consumer standpoint, we're looking at it and saying this is a fairly mature technology at this point. We're seeing refinements, but not giant leaps in evolution from a consumer standpoint. But on the back end of it, the actual creation and delivery of content, it's still like, you know, corporations don't move at the speed of consumers. All right. So we've covered the fact that mobile advertising is hard, yo. Let's talk about some of the strategies that have been applied to mobile advertising. We mentioned one, targeted ads, specifically targeting your not just your behaviors, like what your past browsing habits are, but also your location if you do enable that. Like I said, for most systems, it's an opt-in situation, so you're not being tracked
to do it, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, in some cases, it might be an opt-out, like default on.
Right. I much prefer opt-in, obviously, to opt-out, just because it gives the consumer much more transparent control of what is going on with their data. But yes, in those cases, you will have the ability to reach people and give them ads that are at least have a probability of being more relevant to them than just an ad from a database of sponsors.
Right.
Also, video ads, big deal with mobile advertising and mobile platforms.
Because since people aren't necessarily paying, they're not necessarily reading really in-depth articles about stuff on their mobile platforms. They might be watching a quick video or listening to something.
Yeah, there's a lot more video consumption on mobile platforms. I remember a few years ago when the cellular speeds weren't really good enough to give a very good experience for video. And I was thinking like, oh, this is never going to take off. But of course, once those speeds got better and once the processors got better and the battery life got better on these devices, it became a viable feature. And so a lot of web content creators are making a slow move from traditional web content that you might think of as a database of articles and start to create more video content. And that is in part because that's the kind of content that people are seeking out. It's easy to consume in these mobile platforms. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that the content quality changes. It just the actual delivery of it changes.
Sure.
So you then have a move to start inserting video ads into things. But even that gets a little tough. I mean, depending upon what you're using as a way of delivering video to your consumer. For example, if you're using YouTube, YouTube allows people to serve ads against their content.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, then you get a certain percentage of the ad revenue and Google gets the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And it's not an insignificant amount that Google gets.
No, Google gets a significant amount of that, you know, depending upon, I don't know if all the agreements are the same across all content creators. I imagine that there are different ones. But at any rate, Google does take a cut of that. And on top of that, Google also has an algorithm where you can sometimes skip an ad if you've ever watched a YouTube video.
Skipping 5 seconds kind of thing, right?
So skipping that ad, I suspect, impacts how much money the person who has that content will receive because you've just allowed the user to skip it. Why does Google do this? Well, it's for user experience. It's this idea that by doing this, you keep user satisfaction up. And the algorithm is designed so that there are certain times when you are not going to be allowed to skip an ad. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that particular ad is different from another. It's just that the algorithm has lined it up that way. There are other times where I guess there are ad deals where no matter what, you're never able to skip it. Because I've seen some ads that it didn't matter what video I was watching. That ad was going to play all the way through every time. So these deals are complicated. There's no one-size-fits-all approach, even with YouTube. And that's just one delivery system. Now, there are other ones that are out there on the web, but YouTube's just one of those that's incredibly well-known.
Right, right.
On top of that, you have social platform ads. So this is using stuff like Twitter and Facebook to kind of advertise. So, you know, sponsored tweets where you'll look at your Twitter feed and you're looking
at... And be like, I'm not following Burger King.
Yeah, why am I seeing this? And it's because it's a promoted tweet that the company, in this case Burger King, has paid so that you will know that their latest version of the Whopper is available or whatever. And so you'll see that because it's been promoted into Twitter. That's one way. Another is, of course, on platforms like Facebook, where you'll see those ads that are maybe along the right rail, or occasionally you'll see sponsored.
An inline.
Yeah.
Ad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You'll see sponsored stuff pop up in your feed. And again, that's stuff that companies have paid for. And in this case, that also tends to be run through some algorithms so that the ads that you see, Lauren, are probably different from the ads that I see.
Before we finish up with ads on the go, it's time for, well, an ad. Let's take a quick break.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots. the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I imagine that you get fewer ads for my aforementioned example, engagement rings, than I do because I'm female and therefore I'm clearly interested in receiving a diamond from somebody pretty soon.
And I'm married, so if I start shopping for engagement rings, I'm going to have some serious questions to answer. It's also based upon your browsing habits. I know this because I was recently looking at a costume piece. I was looking for a specific costume piece. And I went to several different websites looking for this, variations on this costume piece. And then I went up back over to Facebook. And lo and behold, one of the things I was looking for was right there in the right rail with the other ads. So it was going beyond just my experience on Facebook. It was looking at my browsing history. Fun times. So it does then filter the various ads that you could get and goes with the ones that you are most likely to find relevant based upon your behaviors and what you've liked in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it may very well be that perhaps that ad I saw isn't related to my browsing history. Maybe I liked something in the past that brought it up. That's quite possible because...
And that it was just a coincidence that you
sure.
noticed because your brain had been on that track.
Exactly. Sure. It could very well be a coincidence. I'm not totally on the this is the cause and this is the effect bandwagon. I'm just 75% there.
Huh.
So, but then there's also the suggestion that content creators have to find ways to make the stuff they generate easy to consume on mobile devices, and it has to be engaging and optimized, and then that means that it needs to be snack-sized.
Kind of like we were saying with more content moving to video, this is similar. This is, if you do have an article, have it something that someone can consume easily and quickly while they're on a mobile tablet or mobile platform.
It might be a paragraph as opposed to an article.
Sure.
It might, you'll see a lot of things like images, slideshows. You'll see, quick things because the idea is that no one wants to sit and read an in-depth article on a mobile platform. Or at least that's not what the majority wants to do. Because as soon as I say that, I'm going to get a lot of people writing in saying, I love reading long articles on my mobile device. I'm one of them. I ride the train all the time. So I'll read, you know, I read books on my phone sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I'll also read, you know, really long pieces written in various publications. Mm-hmm. So I'm outside the norm there, like I am with lots of things. Can't help it. And then also there's the chance of seeing more sponsored content on mobile platforms. So in this case, you might see a site or an article brought to you by something.
Mm-hmm. By fill in the blank. Yeah.
Yeah, especially if it's something that's related to whatever the content of that. Like if it's a blog that's about a specific thing, like a specific subculture or a specific, like, it's, you know, a movie commentary or whatever, you could imagine that that would be sponsored by a company that's related to that subject.
Sure.
And, I mean, obviously that also means that you have examples of editorial content, and then there's advertorial content where it's kind of that mix between advertisement mm-hmm. and editorial. And then there's just ads. It does mean that there's a lot more navigation needed on the part of the user.
Right.
If they're out for something specific.
Sure. That's actually a huge problem for me while I'm researching, especially topics like this, that it's hard to tell sometimes whether articles, from some of these,
marketing companies.
Yeah. Are just advertising their own services or if they're making a valid point.
Right.
I think that it's hard to say what the future will be of this kind of thing.
I mean, obviously mobile's going to play a huge part.
Right.
So we know that. The question is,
you know, people are trying to innovate new ways of putting ad content into our browsing experiences that is going to be less disruptive and more natural and just work out better for everybody. You know,
yeah.
It's certainly nobody wants the user to have a bad experience. That's not going to make someone more likely to buy a product.
Yeah, but at the same time, if there's not this support, then the people who are creating the content have to find other ways of making money because, you know, while there's going to be some content created for free on the internet by people who are just very passionate about whatever it is they're doing, the reality is if you want to make a living at it, then someone has to pay somewhere.
Right.
Because we're not, we haven't reached a point where I can release a podcast in return for a sandwich. Although
right.
I shouldn't say that because next thing I know, I could be brought in for my annual review and say, so we hear you want to be paid in sandwiches.
I think that's how money works. In fact, you can buy as many sandwiches as you want.
What? Can I buy other things besides sandwiches?
I suppose you could.
I'm sold on this money idea.
For example, while I was doing research for this podcast, I ran across a study done by a CEO of a app called Pocket Change. And
okay.
Pocket Change is an app that lets you earn points for activity on other apps. So.
Wow, it's a meta app.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you'll go and, you know, for the number of pages that you browse or the number of, candies that you crush. I don't know what that is, you know, et cetera. You'll earn points that you can exchange for rewards. And so it's another form of advertising and
so in this way, what this app is doing is encouraging your engagement with other apps and other services. And in return, you get rewarded for it.
Similar to the way that you might earn reward points on a credit card.
That's ingenious. That is incredible. I honestly, when I was doing my research, and that's such a simple, elegant way of encouraging people to consume specific types of content.
Do what you want to do. And
right. Like, here are the things that's going to help you earn points.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and hopefully along the way, you are going to enjoy whatever that particular content is.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, some people would just be playing just to accumulate points. But the hope is, of course, that they're going beyond that and they're actually consuming what it is that people are creating.
Right, right. Microsoft has started doing a vaguely similar thing with some of their Microsoft points. You can earn points by playing games or by downloading new games. And and I'm not sure what you can exchange those points for right now exactly because I've earned a grand total of zero of them. But
Lauren's an overachiever.
and you know, that's not mobile, but I think that this is that kind of gamification is something that people are starting to think about doing.
I can see that. Yeah. So there are some creative ways that people are exploring to try and generate money using the mobile platform experience. Because again, the traditional one we've talked about is becoming less relevant over time. It's not like it's irrelevant now. It's not. It's just slowly declining, or it maybe declining is even the wrong word, but starting to plateau, and then it looks like it's going to decline. So the writing's on the wall, really. People have to find other ways of making this work, or else entire companies could end up having to either restructure drastically or even go away because they cannot do
support,
business.
Right.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm sure that solutions will be proposed, implemented, discarded, refined. We're going to see it. It's never going to be a super clean process that you can point from, you know, the beginning to the end and say, and here's the story. It's going to be complex and messy because that's kind of how humans are. But I do think that we will crack this somehow, where it's going to be the kind of experience where no one is going to be feeling like it was, you know, like you're being punished for browsing the web. That obviously would be the wrong message to show, because like you said, Lauren, I'm not likely to buy something if I'm irritated at my experience. But if it's an experience that is entertaining, it's compelling, I'm feeling rewarded, then I'm much more likely to buy something or to look at a particular vendor's services.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just making that work. Yeah, you know, it sounds like a simple idea, but making it work in practice is a complex process.
Absolutely. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Me too, because, you know, I lack my smartphones and I lack my tablets and I lack my laptops.
I also like having a job.
That's also good, so. Yes. Considering that the way we work is very much dependent upon this. Yeah, it's important to us on a personal level. There's no getting around that. And, you know, we love it. So please help us solve this.
And that wraps up this classic episode of Tech Stuff. I hope you guys enjoyed that listen to an oldie but a goodie. It is amazing for me to think about something from 7 years ago and then realize that that's only about halfway through the run of Tech Stuff. But we're going to keep on going through and also giving you new episodes of Tech Stuff on that subject. If you have a suggestion for an episode, send it to me via Twitter. The handle is TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.